This episode of the Old Dogs REI Network is brought to you by Mino Studio. Welcome to the Old Dogs REI Network, where cash flow is king. Real estate investing, the means, so you can enjoy your retirement dreams. This is the show where we cut right to the chase. No sales pitch, no long monologues, just simple how-to real estate investing advice, so you can earn the passive income you need to enjoy your retirement today. And now, your host and chief old dog, Bill Manicero.
Hello, old dogs, and welcome to
Fun Facts Friday.
This is our once a week, only on Friday show, where we have special episodes not featuring guests, where I will share tricks, tips, terminology, and techniques that will help skyrocket you to real estate investing success. Today's episode is Prostitutes, Property Managers, and Airbnb. Well, greetings, fellow old dogs. Hey, and just a point of reference here. Sometimes when I refer to you as an old dog, I'm not speaking literally. I'm hoping you aren't offended because I know you aren't really an old dog. Well, I am, but you guys aren't necessarily. And it doesn't have anything to do with age or attitude. I'm hoping it was a little more, well, I'm kind of hoping that you do have some attitude there. I want you to be tenacious and stubborn and dedicated to your goals, of course, as you're looking to build your real estate portfolio. Anyway, I'm using the term old dog endearingly. More like a name of a team, you know, like we're part of a team, and we are kind of, because we're called the Old Dogs REI Network, and it's kind of like we're a team, like the Wolverines, for example. I don't know if you ever saw that movie Red Dawn. Actually, a really great movie. I love that movie. Anyway, I kind of worn this to the ground, but you got the idea. It's like we're part of a team here, and we're called the Old Dogs. Okay, enough of that. Well, I'm just going to kind of give you an overview of some things just to update you and hopefully share some information that will be of help to you. When I started this podcast, I was committed to three things. Number one, I would always provide valuable content that people can use. I'm hoping that the things that you're listening to on this podcast are helping you in your efforts to grow your real estate portfolio. Number two, I will never charge for educating those that listen. I'm not going to be charging you for consulting time, or I'm not selling anything here. The advice I give, the communication when I meet with people or talk to people on the phone, it's here's a service to help you guys. And number three, I will always be completely transparent, sharing the good, the bad, and the ugly, so that listeners learn, especially from my mistakes, so that they don't do the same thing. Even if it means that I may look like a total idiot as I explain some of the things that I've done. Anyway, that's just a primer for today's episode. I'm going to look at three key areas that I've had experience with that hopefully will be valuable to you. First, I'm going to talk about turnkey investing. Second, buying in the path of progress. And three, creative ways to grow rental income. Now, first, on the turnkey investing side, as much as I'm not generally a big fan of turnkey investing, I have to admit, I fared okay in the long run. My first four properties were all turnkey investments. And I purchased a single-family home in Atlanta, a single-family home in Memphis, a duplex in Memphis, and a duplex in Indianapolis. And the properties, they for the most part, value-wise, they seem to have done okay. It was the operational side that I really had the problems with. For example, the property management firms that I hired as part of the turnkey purchase, they were kind of a disaster. And I only have one property management firm right now that is still with me. All the others have been replaced. There were things like deception, in-place tenants would disappear right after the closing of escrow, things of that nature. I did pay more than market for the properties, but that's kind of an understood part of turnkey investing. And I understand that because they're putting money in to rehab the places and get them primed for a buyer. But for the most part, the properties, I think, have fared okay. A big part of the problem really was me. and that I didn't do the proper due diligence. Now, if you're going to be buying turnkey or you're looking at buying turnkey, please do all the same due diligence on a turnkey property that you would do for any property, including having a property inspection. I just took way too much for granted and didn't do those things. Besides property inspection, I just didn't do a lot of the basic due diligence that I should have done. For example, one of the things I didn't look at was the school ratings. Now, school ratings tell you a lot, especially if you've got, and I have like three-bedroom units, a three-bedroom single-family home, three-bedroom on each side in the duplexes. And, you know, if they're three-bedroom, you're probably going to have kids there or you have the possibility of kids. So school ratings are really important on the value of a property. Let me give you just a quick overview of the properties. The single-family home in Atlanta, purchased it in an area called Forest Park, near where a new Porsche factory was going in. So it looked like there were some promising things in terms of jobs. Well, I bought it for $69,900 in May of 2014. A year later, it was appraised at $80,000, and I did a cash-out refi. Part of that money I used for the purchase of the 22-unit in Indianapolis. The Zestimate, I don't know how you say this, but it's the Zillow estimate of the home today is at $85,296. And Zillow, you know, again, this is not a real strong indicator. You still need to have a formal appraisal, but I think they're pretty good. They've been pretty close on their estimates to the actual appraisals that I've had. Realtor.com says the property is at 95, where Zillow says it's 85. Taking a more conservative, the increase in equity in that property has been about 22% in about 2 years, a little more than 2 years, which isn't too bad. But look at the school ratings here. Elementary, okay, this is on a 1 to 10 scale. The elementary school in the area, a 3. Middle school, a 6. High school, a 4. Not the greatest schools, but there's worse. It's not that bad, but it's not that great either. In Memphis, I bought a single family home there for $61,598. It appraised a year later at $65,000, a little more than a year later, at $65,000 for the cash out refi. Zillow estimate, look at this. Latest Zillow estimate is $28,000. That was like cutting more than half the value of the home from what I purchased it at. Now, Realtor.com is a little more gracious, giving me basically the value that I bought it at is $61,298 is their estimate. But I got to find out what's going on in that neighborhood at that kind of a decrease. But look at the school ratings. Elementary school, a 2. Middle school, 1. High school, 2. Ooh, I mean, that's really low. And this is a family neighborhood. Not real good. The duplex in Memphis, bought it at $77,000, appraised February 2016 at $82,000. Current Zillow estimate, $83,000. Realtor.com gives it $109,000. $639,000, but taking the more conservative, it's an increase of at least 8% in roughly 2 years. School ratings, though, elementary 3, middle school 1, high school 2, not so great. And then the duplex in Indianapolis, I purchased in an area called Bates Hendricks, which is a pretty good area, but it is attracting a lot of millennials and others, so the school rating may not be as critical, but nonetheless, I bought this property at $51,500. The Zillow estimate currently is $118,278. That's anywhere near accurate, and it looks like it is because I've seen other properties for sale in that area. That'd be an increase of 129% in just a little over a year. That's amazing. School ratings aren't that great. Elementary 3, middle school 1, high school 2. I mean, would you want to put your kids in those kind of schools? So those are all real significant things to take a look at. Currently, after purchasing the 100-plus property that we're looking for right now, I'm seriously considering selling the 2 single-family homes. One, the property values are up, except for the one in
in Memphis that I'm not really sure of right now. But the other part is that it has been really expensive. I've had things like air conditioners stolen, and I've had water heaters replaced, and some basic things like that. I had a roof repair. Those things have just taken a huge bite, because you think after the mortgage payment, after all expenses, you know, you have 100 to 200, you know, if you're really lucky, you know, 300 a door in cash flow. But you can buy one air conditioning unit and you can just wipe out your whole year's earnings. So I'm seriously considering letting go of those properties if I can get the value out of them. Okay, the next area I'm going to take a look at is buying in the path of progress. Location still reigns and will continue to reign as the most important factor regarding a property purchase. Part of buying smart is buying a property in the right location. A significant factor in purchasing our 22 unit in Indianapolis was the assessment that it is clearly in the path of progress. In other words, it is in a location where jobs, new businesses, and property values are expected to increase. On one side where we are located, there's a downtown redevelopment effort called the East Washington Economic Development Area, and there's a lot of growth and industry going into there, and the city is really consciously trying to improve that area near downtown. On the other side of us is an area called Irvington, which is a more upscale area. It's attracting more families and upscale businesses. In fact, I think Indianapolis's first Starbucks went into Irvington. However, it's not always clear how long this transformation will take. When I first purchased the property last year, the area was a C area. I think it's still a C, but it could be maybe a C+. I don't see it becoming a B anytime soon. We're doing all we can do to try to help the area and to help, but we really can't change the rating on it. It's going to be something that's going to happen with a lot more development in the area. But the things that we've done to try to help that, we've improved the curb appeal of the property, nice landscaping, attractive building signage, increased rents, which boost the value and the overall ROI. The property value has increased 71% just by cutting expenses and boosting income. We've met with other area landlords to encourage their upgrades and kind of network together in terms of tenants. They've done exterior improvements, curbside improvements, new signage and landscaping as well. We're actively trying to boost that area. You know, we've made friends with the cops in the area and others, and we're really reporting anything that we see that looks like it would have a negative impact on the area. We're trying to bring in higher quality tenants. This is a big part. When I first got the building, I had some druggies in the building and they're gone, and we're trying to replace them with good solid folks, and that really helps the area as well. I still have some regular issues, though, and this is sort of the good, bad, and the ugly part of things. But if you're a regular listener, you might remember I went to live in one of the units in Indianapolis. You can see episodes 044 and 048, where I talk about it in a lot more detail. But I learned a lot on those trips, and there were a lot of positive things. I sped up renovations and upgrades. We made some strong community contacts. We boosted strong relationships with the local cops. Boosted vacancy numbers. It was a good trip. It was worth the trip. But I also had a few sort of not so good experiences. I woke up in the middle of one night with gunshots from a party next door, and that was a little scary. I was attacked by bed bugs, found out we had some those little varmints in our building. There was some drug dealers in a building next door that we reported to the cops. So the cops, we became good friends with them, and they asked if they could set up a little sting operation in one of our upstairs units. It's kind of street side on the corner. And we said, sure, you know, what are you going to be doing? And they said, it's going to be a prostitution sting operation. And what they did is they had one of their female cops pretend to be a prostitute in the area, and I don't know. I didn't really watch what they did, but it was meant to bust not only John's in the area, but it also to bust other prostitutes. In the meantime, I'm showing this apartment, trying to get things going, and the cops are there, and it's kind of awkward. But I had this real strong prospective tenant that I, you know, filled out an application, and I thought, oh, this is great. You know, nice young girl, she's going to be staying there or whatever. I find out afterwards, okay, that she was a local prostitute who actually had clients in our building, and she wasn't really looking to rent a unit. She was actually casing the place to see where the cops were and what they were doing. And here I thought I had a tenant. Okay, so that was really a very strange situation. Never a boring moment. Okay, so that's just a few highlights of some of the challenges we've had. But nonetheless, despite all that kind of weird stuff going on, we've boosted the overall value of that building. The ROI has gone up significantly as a result of cutting expenses and boosting rents. So the value of the property has gone up like 78%. So that's the one really amazing thing. As I compare this property to those single family homes, yeah, they've gone up kind of naturally by the value in those areas. But this one we can control. This is something you can control with a multifamily that you can actually boost the value. It's called forced appreciation. And that is something that we're experiencing there, which is really great. Finally, the creative ways to grow rental income. I recently had a guest on, Al Williamson. I think it was episode June 29th. It was episode 109. And he talked about strategic ways to boost rental income. And I was very motivated after listening to him and after the interview. And we discussed maybe doing something like he had talked about in his interview with our 22 unit. One of the things he talked about was to take an empty unit and make it sort of an Airbnb rental, so short-term rentals. So I talked to Al, we kind of put this thing together. I followed his plan, furnished a unit, set it up as an Airbnb rental. And I set it up with a 1 month minimum. So you only people that can rent are people that are going to stay for at least 30 days. Part of the reason I did that is because I just don't have the staff for turnaround. And I don't know that I want to mess with, you know, changing and cleaning things up every couple days or every week. So we have a 30-day minimum on it. I mean, the great thing about it is that it's a minimum of doubling the rental that I would be getting from a one-year lease individual. Within a week, I had an inquiry. I posted on Airbnb. I had a medical intern from Spain call who wanted to come and stay for a short term until they found a more permanent place. But it was a basement unit. They weren't real thrilled about. Didn't go for it. Shortly after that, I got an online booking from a new graduate, just graduated from college, got a job with a big brokerage firm in Indy. Already had an apartment picked out. They just needed a place for about 50 days. And so it sounded great. The total income from that was $1,400, more than twice what the rent for that unit. I mean, the unit rents for like $450. We had some rain problems. I wasn't able to put them into the one bedroom, so I had to put them into a studio. So I did reduce that price. But, it looked like it was going great. But unfortunately, okay, the guy, he liked the apartment, but he was scared of the neighborhood. I stayed there, like I said, for a month. I don't think that the neighborhood, I mean, yeah, I know I talked about gunshots and prostitutes and all these things, but overall, you know, it's a pretty friendly place. It's not a bad neighborhood, but I mean, it's not the greatest, but it's an urban setting and you have to be aware of that. So basically he said, no problem. He only stayed 10 days. So I had to give him a refund for the difference. You know, that was kind of a drag, but I'm not discouraged. I talked to Al afterwards and we're kind of reword it and probably try to get some more pictures in there of the neighborhood so that people know that it is an urban setting. So they need to be aware of that. This guy was, he'd get up early in the morning because he's a stockbroker. He'd come out in a suit. He had a brand new car in the parking lot. He was just real, real concerned. He felt uncomfortable. He also came in home late at night, and I guess some folks had, you know, called out to him or something and made him feel uncomfortable. So anyway, so I'm not giving up on the Airbnb thing, but just want to let you know, haven't successfully done it yet, but just little things that we're working on like that. Anyway, those are just a few things that I hope will help you in your efforts. That is it for today. Please note, Old Dog listeners, everything presented here today including the links, can be accessed in our show notes on the Old Dogs REI Network.com website. /blog is where you find the show notes. So it's Old Dogs REI Network.com /blog. Thank you for listening. Until next time, remember, cash flow is king and real estate investing the means. Thanks again for listening, and may God bless.
Thank you very much for visiting the Old Dogs REI Network. We would greatly appreciate if you would stop by iTunes and let us know what you think of the show. We would love if you could subscribe to the podcast, give us a 5-star rating, and write a review. The more ratings and reviews we receive, the more visible the podcast will be to others. Thank you.